I'm here today with Ken Nixon. He was appointed the Erie School District's first coordinator of educational diversity, equity, and inclusion in 2017. We're just going to hear about his work and how things are progressing. So Ken, just tell us a little bit about your background leading up to this position.
Okay, not a problem. Came out from Clarion University with a degree in elementary and special education. Got right into a teaching position, which would have been at Central High School back then. It was a math learning support position. And then as I started teaching, we added in some life skills students. So that's kind of how I started off. I started off like teaching special education, moved into emotional support, which is supporting students that typically have either a diagnosis or a specific behavior. They need supports in terms of behavior programming. So from there, continued to pursue my work. I started to pursue my education leadership, a master's at Gannon University, where I finished up my principal paper, my superintendent letter of eligibility, and then started working as an education specialist for about 3 years. And then I actually moved into an assistant principal position at Strong Vincent. So basically, the teaching component, you have to have 5 years as a teacher to become an administrator or to move into like a counselor, those ranks. So I did the 5 years. It was quick. Actually, my last year was unique that I was doing discipline in the morning as like a quasi assistant principal. It's called an education specialist. We did it back then. It's changed now. But then in the afternoon, I would teach, and I would help support some regular classrooms as a push-in learning support teacher, and then I would actually teach one class myself. So real unique situation, definitely great experiences. I am leaving out that one other real quick. I actually did my student teaching in Pittsburgh Public School
District.
Oh, you
did? Okay.
And not a lot of people know this, but it was a very unique situation. I was doing my student teaching, did my first, my special ed component, because I was special ed elementary. And as I shifted to my elementary student teaching placement, I was only in it for about a week. And a very unique situation that I was asked to go back to the school that I was previously at, which was Margaret Malines in the Hill District in Pittsburgh, which is pretty popular, well known for the jazz. Jazz is very popular out of there, but it can tend to have some rough spots.
Yep.
And so I got hired by Clarion University, the PDE, Pennsylvania Department of Education, and Pittsburgh Public all agreed to allow me to teach at salary pay for my last student teaching placement. So it was a very unique situation. I had 11 boys. It was called a therapeutic support room. I had 11 boys that had been through alternative ed or suspensions, and fresh out of school, or not even done with school, but being able to be in front of those students really, I think, really matured me and really let me know right away of this is what I want to do, and I think is kind of a thrust for the reason why I want to do this work around equity.
Yes.
Because that's, just being you're not even a graduated teacher yet, and now you're in front of 11 students that people have pretty much wrote off.
Yep.
Like, we can't do anything else with these kids, and I got those kids to succeed academically. I got those kids to behave from a positive standpoint. So I really, that was a very eye-opening experience that I believe still resonates and has impact on what I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I just fast forward very fast. But so assistant principal, Strong Vincent, Central High School, then Central Tech, and then I had the ability to be a principal of what's called PEACE, which is an alternative ed school that we used to have housed in the basement of Wilson, and that was a 3rd through 8th grade program. I did that for a year, and then I ended up moving into the elementary ranks. So where I was at Edison, Lincoln, and Jefferson for about a year and a half, then I had the opportunity to go to Collegiate Academy, which is college prep education. So when you ask me kind of like the experience that's brought me to this, teaching, assistant principal, but I've had, in terms of our district, I've had the full gamut in terms of kindergarten through 12, career in tech, college preparatory, traditional. So I definitely feel very confident in stepping into more of a district administrator role when I'm having conversations with teachers and principals, and because I can relate and identify pretty much each of those levels. So I think that's helpful.
Oh, yeah. Before we get to the context of this position and why it's so meaningful, just circle. You went to Central, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're an Erie kid. So so what made you want to come back and do that?
Oh, that's a great question. So, yeah, I graduated from Central in 1996. I just had the heart to want to make a difference and change our city and change our school district. I think that was a lot of it because I had a situation where I was wronged educationally. There was something that happened in a particular class. I was in an honors English class, and there was something that happened, and I kind of took the blame for it, and it wasn't me. But I ended up being put in a remedial English course. So you go from honors, where I worked hard to get there, and then to be moved back into like a remedial. That was like in my 10th grade year, I believe. And then from there, I really feel like that set me back educationally. So I know that you know, right now we talk about school prison pipeline. We talk about how a lot of our black students are achieving very low academically, but yet, you know, not achieving, but getting a ton of or a disproportionate amount of behavior in terms of behavior events, in terms of suspensions, expulsion. So I know how all of that can kind of play a role. And then looking at my own situation where I wasn't suspended or anything like that, but I was just moved, and I was moved wrongly. And put into a class that actually hurt me as I pursued and went into my college education. So I think that is, when you ask me that, I haven't really shared that with too many people, but that is the one main reason why I wanted to come back to Erie.
Plus you lived
family.
It.
Yeah, I lived the experience, and I want to set it up systemically from a systems approach that what happened to me doesn't continue to happen to students such as myself or others.
Can you set the context for people as to why equity, inclusion, you know, diversity is important in the district? And I know there's some statistics about the number of, you know, minority students versus the number of teachers that, you know, are there, the disparate discipline that you talked about. Set that context for people as to why it's important to be looking at these things and trying to address them.
No, not a problem. So when we started our strategic plan, I think 3 years back, we did the planning phase. And, you know, we brought in 100 core people from, we made a 100 core member team. And so there were different people from, you know, people from the mayor's office, community, parents, teachers, different people, stakeholders, you know, from our area plus internally. And I feel like that the group that supports us, the performance fact group, they put a ton of data out and showing how far behind we are academically, and they broke it down by race and ethnicity, and also showed that information based on behavior as well. And in terms of equity, diversity, inclusion, you know, it's we as a district, which you see this nationwide in a lot of our districts that are inner city or urban education, is that a lot of times students of color are not achieving at the level of the white students. And so when you talk about equity, you know, it's not equality. And so, because equality is giving people 50-50.
Right.
So we're kind of like, you know, as far as equality, that's where we're at, where everybody can go to the same school. You know, that's kind of that old, that's the way it is now. You know, that's the equality key factor, which is important. But the next part is equity, and so making sure that students that either have been marginalized, oppressed, or have been continually underperforming are getting necessary resources, strategies, funding, to make sure that they can be uplifted so that they're achieving at the level of others that have always been. So that's kind of what I see as a major impact of how equity plays a role in education. So I think that's one of the key pieces. And then kind of setting the stage still, you think about diversity. I mean, think of how much our city has changed over the past 4 years. I mean, at one point we were very black and white. We were a very black and white city, you know. And we had, we did have refugee families and that, but they weren't from Nepali and they weren't from Africa. They were from, you know, Bosnian, or they were Italian or Polish, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it was still black and white. And our city still very much divided that way, you know, when you look at different parts of the city and all that. But I mean, when you think about the influx of the new refugee second language families that we have, that's what makes us rich. I mean, it really does. I mean, you have more Hispanic families, you know, Asian population. A lot of people don't really think about Nepal, Bhutan families, but they do classify under Asian. So just looking at how we've really become culturally diversified in a rich state that I feel is very key and important to the work that we have to do as teachers, as administrators, as district leaders, to make sure that all students are educated and taken into consideration. The inclusion side of it is really focusing on safe students and families feeling safe, feeling welcome, and feeling accepted. So when you start talking about that, we're definitely talking about from a race ethnicity standpoint for sure, but even more so, we're talking about your gender identity and your sexual orientation, because that also plays a pivotal role in students feeling safe, welcome, and accepted. So, you know, walking through all of that, there's the diversity, there's the equity, and there's the inclusion parts, and that's pretty much what I'm getting into in terms of my job day in, day out, but it can be different. One day it could be more diverse on diversity, you know, looking at curriculums, talking about recruitment, and then one day it could be more about, from the equity side, where we're looking more about positive behavior, and we're talking more about data and behavior data, and we're talking about our positive behavior intervention support framework. So, or we could be talking about, you know, looking into gender-neutral restrooms so that our transgender and cisgender students both feel comfortable and equally appreciated. So, I mean, that's setting the stage.
Oh, yeah. And it's different tasks multiple times a day, I would guess. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I've been asked that. I've talked to like a couple different like university classrooms.
Yeah.
And talked to certain people, and I've done a couple podcasts with like PSBA and that, and that's one of the questions, like, what's your day look like?
Yes.
And it's like, my day can definitely be different, you know, just from day to day. I don't have a pretty consistent schedule.
Yeah.
Because it just ranges based on like what's the most, you know, priority wise, like what's the most important, what needs to be done, you know, by tomorrow or the end of this week, and then just kind of like going from there. But we can definitely get pop-ups.
Yeah, I love that term.
Pop-ups. Opportunities.
How, when you're looking back at a year or whatever, like, how are you gauging, you know, progress or inroads, you know, impact, I'm not sure the right mm-hmm. word, but... what things stand out in your mind as like, I know I made a difference here, or we, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because I really try to watch the I and me, and I try to focus on the we and the team, because that's really what, you know, that's really where it's at. I mean, especially when you're asking that, you know, we talked about the strategic plan, and so there's five goals. Goal 4 is equity, fairness, and justice, and that's one goal that I lead, and I do lead that as a district leader, but it's a team of about 30 people that are community folks, internal and external stakeholders that are really helping with this work. So when you say how do you gauge it, we're definitely gauging it through our strategic plan work.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned performance fact, and like we just had a data summit. So every 6 to 12 week plan, but roughly probably about every 9 weeks, you could say, as an average, we've been bringing what's called an ILT, which is an instructional leadership team. We've been bringing a team.
Instructional what?
I'm sorry, an instructional leadership team. It's called ILT. Very popular. I think most of our school districts probably around us probably do use ILTs or PLCs, which are professional learning communities. But what we've done is for the data summit, we bring the ILT in, which is six. There's 12, usually 12 people total, but 6 of them are coming in to really focus in on the planning, preparation, digging in data, having conversations with their building administrators, and then prepping to then do it as a whole staff the following Monday. So we just had one this Monday. So when you ask about gauging, we're doing so by that. So when we look at our data, and performance fact again, they have tools that are set up to rate your 4-lens approach. So they look, equity is one of those lenses that goes specifically with the work that, you know, I'm involved in. So each building is looking at their academics, their behavior through that lens.
Okay.
So that one equity. There's 4 lenses, but the one specifically is equity. But so we know kind of we're getting a read, because you're either red. I think it's red, yellow, and green.
Okay.
So if you're red, you know that's a standout. That's something you got to get to. If it's yellow, it looks like it's in progress. And if it's green, you know, you're doing something right. So we say celebrate and replicate.
What could get you a red? Like, what kind of things on the ground could put you in the red?
If you're not, if in terms of achievement, if your achievement, if you're off in terms
okay.
of, you're maybe there's a certain mark that that has been set for you to be at, and you're not there. You know, so if the mark is 20% increase and you only had a 10%, so that could be a red.
And so would that kick in efforts to do more like remedial work or hands-on tutoring or like, you know, how would that?
Yeah, you're spot on. So what it does is it triggers you to look at more specific and level in interventions. We use what's called MTSS, which is our multi-tiered systemic support model, very common model. But that's through response to intervention. So those are some things you could check out. But MTSS supports the RTI, or response to intervention. But anyways, it's a tiered system. So your tier one was like good for 80% of your students. And then your tier two is about 15% of your students. And then your tier three is 5%. And we structured a lot of our interventions out that way. So like what would, like you just mentioned, small groups. So small groups wouldn't be necessary as a tier one intervention. Small groups would be a tier two intervention, because tier one would be the strategies that we're putting into our curriculum in our classrooms.
Okay.
Or
just
behaviorally.
Broad. Yeah, broad,
right?
General
or behaviorally,
things.
It would be like the expectations in the cafeteria, like we talked about. So the expectations in the hallway, expectations in classroom, those are for everybody that's going to experience, go through, live in that space. And then to get more, once we start to see if certain students or are having areas of weakness or need improvements, or certain teachers are having areas of weakness or need improvements, well, that's when we got to embed some strategies, some interventions, and give supports to the those specific needs. So what the Data Summit does, and when you ask, like, how do you know? Me personally, I feel definitely we do surveys. So the strategic plan came with surveys. In my first year, I did something called the PA School Climate Survey, which is a free survey put out by the Office of Safe Schools from the Department of Education. We surveyed everybody. We surveyed multiple levels. Well, third grade and up. We didn't go to the youngers because they have to still do it online or take it. So we surveyed parents. We asked community members, and we asked our staff, and basically took that data and utilized it to make some changes, share it with those ILTs at the building levels, so they knew exactly where their weak points are and where they can get better. So when you're asking me how I see it by our school climate and our school culture improving. So, I mean, if you've ever been into certain buildings, organizations, banks, you get a gist of kind of the vibe. You can get a vibe. You can pick up the culture. You can pick up the climate in that particular organization, sometimes just from maybe the cashier, that the bank teller, you know, maybe they're a little rude or they're a little short, or maybe they could be having a bad day, or maybe they're just like tired and frustrated with that organization. You never know, but that plays a role when you're gauging based on what that experience and that interaction was.
That's fascinating. It's so data-driven, though. We keep talking about that in Erie, like trying to find data-driven solutions, whether it's violence or other things, and you're actually doing that, you know.
So the one to get to, I'm kind of still giving you like the 30,000 view.
Yeah.
To get really kind of like in the weeds or in the nitty-gritty in the trench. One thing that we do, we have Infinite Campus is our student portal, so it houses all of our student information, behavior, test scores, academics. So we have, thanks to Julie Iverone, she's one of our instructional technology gurus, you could say, but she created these reports through conversation of different people, different administrators, different teachers. We've created reports called behavior event reports, where we actually have all of our behavior data broken down by functions of behavior, broken down by locations of behavior, and it's all broken down by race and ethnicity, because it goes to exactly what we're doing for Goal 4.
Right.
So, you know, we talk about going to Goal 4, the game-changing target for Goal 4 was a reduction of Black student behavior events by 50%. Or until proportional data is attained.
And give people a little context for that, because there was disproportionality detected there, right?
Yes. Yes, and I kind of made a really broad general statement about nationwide, like public schools tend to see 7-to-1. Like, you see Black students getting suspended or sent to the office 7 times more than their white counterparts. In our district, we're more around like 4-to-1. We're not to that level as some, but we definitely still mean that we have work to do.
Okay.
So that is a lot of the that plus the Goal 4, that core team of folks. I think we had like 40, 50 people coming together looking at that data, and that's how we got to the game-changing target. We wanted to see that reduction. We wanted to see supports put in place to help our Black students and help our teachers and our administrators do better and take better approaches to support our black students so that we can see that reduction. And when I say that, 50% reduction, and then I said until proportional discipline is attained.
Right.
So what that looks like is, let's just call out a common elementary, an elementary building, right? And if you have most of our schools average around like a 37% black student population, most of our buildings, that's not all of them. There are differences in demographics. I think everybody knows that, but it's an average. But what we're seeing is like in that 39% or 37% of black students, their behavior events are at making up 75 to 80% of the behavior events of that school. And so there's some differences there that we talk through as a district in terms of maybe there's some special education needs that are more of a necessity, or what are we doing to help bridge that, to repair that and restore that. So that's where like a lot of the work that we've been doing with people, certain schools taking steps at restorative practices, which is restorative justice is a common it's a program that was kind of implemented to really help with repairing victimization from more like probation and more of the criminal justice standpoint. And they took that and put an education framework around it called restorative practices. So restorative practices is actually being implemented in two of our buildings where they talk about circles, where they get people around a circle and they really talk about victimization. It's all about restoring the offender and the victim.
Right.
And it actually, where a lot of people are, we're thinking just student, but it actually can get to the point of teacher and student. Because at times, as an adult, sometimes, again, we're people with feelings, we have emotions, and though we shouldn't be taking it out or saying something wrong to a student, it does happen. To be realistic, it happens. So that's the one great part about it, is that you can actually circle up, maybe a gym teacher that got frustrated with a kid, running through the gym class and maybe said something that was a little mean or rude, hurt the kid's feelings. The kid goes to the administrator. Well, now there's a process called a circle. Hmm. And you can sit down and repair and mend that relationship. So every time that kid comes in, there's not a constant button of the heads between the student and the adult. So just something like that is something we're doing. SEL, which is our social-emotional learning. We have second step. I think there's other social-emotional learning curriculum that we're utilizing. It's not coming right at the moment. But that's in about three or four of our elementary buildings, and we're looking more about that. We have buildings that actually just the first 45 minutes of Monday across the whole entire building is just a social-emotional lesson. So there's 22 skills. It may be about how to make a friend, or how to deal with being sad, or how to deal with somebody being mean to you. But the whole building, I'm talking every teacher, every staff, they're all in for 40 minutes helping kids learn that process. I started talking about that because I wanted to give a little bit of what we're doing to help with the disproportionality.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot more. If you fast forward to right now, we have two big pieces that we're working on. One is our culturally responsive professional development plan. That's pretty much been the work of our Goal 4 team. So I mentioned the Goal 4 team. It's actually two separate teams that build up a whole Goal 4. There's a diversity team, and they focus on diverse curriculums, diversity recruitment. And then there's an equity team, which focuses on our discipline, our data, being equitable. The equity team has been the main group that has been looking at revamping our student handbook. That's a big one. Our student handbook.
Yeah.
Our student handbook has been, it's made changes, and we have some of our attorney that works on that has done tremendous work to get rid of like zero tolerance policies. We have most of that out of our handbook, but it still needs to take, we have still many more strides to make to help support that handbook. So when a building administrator is going to it, we can start to apply some of those PBS elements. So for example, an equity statement. I'm really bringing in the family and parent to be part of the discipline conversation, or to be part of the discipline policy, I should say. Because a lot of times when we make up the student handbook, we do it as the educators. We set the agenda for the policy along with our advice from our school solicitor. But it's time to start getting parents to actually have a little more say-so in what the discipline policy is like. And how does it really affect you at the home level when we're going through and we're making these decisions with disciplinary consequences? So that's a big one that the equity, the Goal for Equity team is starting to really get into. And again, we're using our, it's called the PBIS, which is Positive Behavior Intervention Supports. There's seven elements that help to reduce or remove disproportionality data. So we're using that to help revamp our handbook. And there's a team of the Goal for Equity and a small group of about 20 district administrators involved in that. And the other big part, and this is all, again, about reducing that disproportionality data, and is the Goal for Diversity team. We've been working on the culturally responsive professional development plan. That is specifically three levels. So the first level is something called Harvard University. I think a lot of people know Harvard. They created something called a self-reflection bias test. So there's 13 different biases that you can have. It can be, you might not like people with freckles. You might not like people with red hair. You might not like obese people. You might not like physically handicapped people. I mean, not that you don't like them, but you can have a bias against them. So I should watch my words. And one is about race. So there's 13 tests. This is one of the parts of the culture response plan, is to get people to take the race bias test, just to get a gauge of where you're at. Because it's going to tell you who you favor more and who you don't favor. You know, based on just pushing a couple keys and looking at faces on the screen, it gauges that, but just gives you something to self-reflect on. And the next step is we have the SAS portal, which is our student aligned, I'm sorry, standards aligned systems, which is a pretty well-known portal for educators in the Pennsylvania specifically. That has a professional development hub, but it has two courses on it that are already created to help with equitable practices, and then help with culturally responsiveness. And then looking at the Kerwin Institute, which is a four-module program that focuses on implicit bias, and that's done by Ohio State University. And those are all free and can be used for either a non-instructional person like a custodian, a secretary, or an instructional person like a teacher. So there's, it applies to all levels. So that's the first level. And the second level is we actually, the Goal for Diversity team has vetted multiple trainings. We either experienced the trainings, like sat in the trainings ourselves, or we've done some research with talking with the trainers and digging a little bit more. For example, that would be the second level. But for example, one of those would be the Southern Poverty Law Center, very well-known, reputable organization in terms of fighting against hate and implementing justice. But they have what's called teaching tolerance. They have a whole training on that. There's like three different phases. So this is something that our building administrators could say, all right, I'm going to send two people from my building. They're going to go to this training. Or they can even have the trainers come into the building and do a day with the staff. So that's like the second level. And then the third level is taking it a little bit deeper, where you're doing more like a principal or an administrator-led book study. We actually did a administrator, not my first year, last year. I'm not mixing my years. I'm sorry.
It's only been
3 years, but we did take the administrators through a book study, which was called For White Folks Who Teach in the Hood, and the rest of y'all too. And it's by Chris Emden. It's really good. Got a lot of good strategies and approaches to help, especially a white person that is an educator, be able to relate and deal with inner city students, but be able to apply multiple different strategies or approaches so that you're bringing more of the student's culture and environment into your classroom to help you gauge and build a better relationship with them. And so, just real quick, you know, a lot, it's tough to hear, like, a lot of people get caught up on just white folks, because it says for white folks to teach them, and a lot of people get caught up in that. But if you're willing to look past it, read through a couple of the chapters, you'll see how it starts to actually apply and give you really good strategies. For example, after you teach a class, keep four or five of those students back, talk to them a little bit. Hey, what can I do better? As a teacher, talking to students, what can I do better? Is there anything that I do that is holding you back from being able to learn this particular skill? Or, you know, in the example in the book, it was a teacher that actually yelled a lot, or would yell at certain points during the school, the class. And so those kids gave him that feedback. So the next day, it was funny, and the next day he was teaching, and, you know, and he looked at one of the students that he had met with, and they were giving him, like, the cutthroat sign. And he's like, oh, my gosh, I'm yelling. And so but just something simple like that, that acknowledgement. But, again, that book is a very good book, but that books like that, or Courageous Conversations About Race by Glenn Singleton, actually a small group of teachers at Piper Burley are digging into that book right now, and I'm actually part of that group. And we're on, like, chapter 6 or 7 or something. There's, like, 9 chapters. But it really, that takes you a little bit deeper dive into not just strategies approaches, but more about racism, institutional racism. It really gets you into more of a deeper conversation. But that would be like the third level. That's what we're looking for, our staff and our building administrators to kind of start leading our teachers, our behavior specialists, our counselors, lead them through. So those are two big pieces that I've been working on this year. So
are things starting to emerge, especially that piece that you're talking about, the different levels with the faculty and staff? Are things, what's the feedback on that, or what are people realizing? Are they talking out loud about it, or do they go home and go, oh?
So that's a complex. That's a great question.
I know it's very complex.
And I'm going to be.
Yeah.
I've learned, especially in this position, it's best to be transparent.
Yeah.
Be upfront and honest. So, we did it in last year on November 6th. We did a district-wide bias, examining our bias, and there was actually YouTube video still on there. If you type in examining our bias,
It
might pop up. I'm on that, so just ignore my part. No, I'm just joking. But so we took the whole district. I'm talking about the secretaries in the administration building, bus drivers, cafeteria workers, building administrators, teachers. The whole district took the whole day. And they went through a different, like a series with some Q&A, some conversation. And so what we did was, that's one thing Mr. Pluto said, hey, we got to gauge. We got to know what's going on. What do people say?
Yep.
So we used SurveyMonkey, and I put this three-question survey together that was intentionally done and left for people to put comments. So it was done intentionally to give people to able to speak up a little bit and give us more of a true voice about what they felt about this bias in service. And you know, when you look at the bar graph on, like, do we need more, you know, how many people feel we don't need any, or, where are you kind of in the middle? The bar was the highest. We had almost, I think, 742 responses, so we had 1,100 staff. So that's a decent amount.
Yeah, it is.
And most of it said, hey, we want more. We need a little bit more about bias. We need a little bit more about cultures. We need a little bit more about race and what that's all about. But one thing we did know, and you said, like, do people walk away and share out maybe at the local bar or share out at home, vent a little bit about what they're going through. We did know that there was a lot of like undertow conversation about people feeling a little distraught, a little, maybe there's some fear, a little angst, a little concern because of the fact that we were digging into this, starting to dig into this work. This is real work. I mean,
it's the hardest conversation in America, right?
It is, absolutely.
So,
and I think we're still, so if you ask me, I think we've made strides, and different administrators, kudos to them, have taken on. Like, we did have one building, one administrator, Kathleen Farnham at Harding, she took on that book study I mentioned. She put that book study right into her ILT. I mentioned the ILT.
Yeah.
And again, those conversations, you know, it's a different mix. It's a conversation that people sometimes aren't ready to get into.
Right.
But it's so necessary to have. And then the key is necessary to have, but ongoing. It's not a one-off.
No.
And that's what we're learning. Like, this work is not one-off. None of this. Helping our students be more academically engaged and seeing increases in our achievement. We have two new curriculums. At the elementary level, CKLA and iReady, like putting those in place, putting two brand new curriculums as a whole district is major, major stress, major work on the teachers, major work on the students. But we're seeing now that we're in, going on our fourth, fifth month of school, got a semester down, we're seeing a lot of fruit. We're seeing kids starting, like kids that were kind of like, well, I don't know if that kid can really do it. You know, now you're seeing kids that are like excelling in maybe that they should only got 17-point jump and they're getting like a 30-point jump.
Wow.
So it's like you're starting to see a lot of that. It all comes together. It's all part of that strategic plan. And I think that that's key because we're being very intentional about specific work. We're focusing on language. We're focusing on English language arts. We're focusing on math. We're focusing on behavior.
Yeah.
And so when you focus on that, focus on the behavior, what we're talking about is people know that's not going away. So even though we did that bias in service, a lot of people got a little upset about it because a lot of times people feel like bias is still racist, you know, but bias is not racist. Mm-hmm. Bias is something that you experience, you live.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, on a generic level, if you grow up around all white people, that's who you're going to be most comfortable around.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is. And if I grew up around mostly black people, which I didn't. My mother, I'm biracial. My mother's right. white. My father's black. So I feel very comfortable in really any space I get into. But still, I still have bias, though. You know, right. I still have a bias, and I know what my bias is because I took that Harvard self-reflection test. But it's not racism. Racism is a whole different. Racism, prejudice, discrimination are not bias. So it's still tough because people aren't, they're not there yet, but I feel strongly that, like, people take it, like I mentioned, that principal take it on that book study. People are starting to have the conversation. There's some buildings that have a routine every 2-3 weeks. They're bringing up an article about race and bias and culture, and they're talking. But it's still at a lower level. We'll be announcing the cultural responsive plan at the next data summit.
Oh, okay.
And Mr. Polito actually, this is kind of like fresh news, and Mr. Polito will be actually putting some information out to our administrators to help give them some insight and where we're going to go with this. And that, again, like I mentioned with the strategic plan, that's what I was trying to go, is that this is not a one-off, this is a constant. So this is the work we're doing over the next 5 years, over a 5-6 year span, and it's not going to change. And funding's lining up with it, you know, staff are lining up, and these are the pieces that we're doing. And I feel that's what's really going to be more of the fruit. When you say, what's the gauge? It's that, it's all of that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. If you're gauging, you know, the behaviors and the academic performance and stuff with the kids, are you gauging the bias and the testing with the faculty and staff too? Are you going to like measure? Are we?
So when you asked me that, go ahead. No, I was going to say, when you asked me that question. So again, I related that revamping the student handbook.
Yeah.
And I related with those P7 elements, and I also related the cultural responsive plan. I feel strongly that those will be big pieces. Those will be game changers within the game-changing target. So those pieces will help with that disproportionality of bringing down that getting that 50%, getting that proportional discipline attained. So will we be gauging it? I mean, we could probably definitely do another Survey Monkey kind of to see how, after like another in-service. But what we're going to truly see, again, I mentioned that climate culture.
Yeah.
We're going to start to see that. Plus, looking at data and looking at how your behavior events, where are they at? What's your rate of your suspensions, expulsions? I feel like that's going to be a good read on, is it making an impact? Is it starting to change? And this is not going to be a blink of the eye, you know, by November of next year. No, this is like 2 to 3. This is a 2 to 3 year, probably more like a 3 to 5 year process.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, you know, a lot of people want quick results, but that's not the way things work. Especially when you're getting to talking about bias and race and changing practices that have been either stuck or have been done wrong for years right. upon years. It takes a while to really dig out of that. It's kind of like weight loss. They say, like, you know,
you don't
put 100 pounds on in a day, and you're not going to lose, you're not going to lose, you know, 10 pounds in it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You're not going to lose
100 pounds.
It takes time. You put that weight on over a period of time, it's going to take time to get that weight off.
But it strikes me, as you're talking, like the insights people might gain from doing this work could have benefits beyond even what's happening in the district.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's like part of changing a culture in a city, too.
Absolutely. Right?
And are you getting feedback, you know, from people in a positive way about this experience for them, or?
So I guess I want to answer that, but I do want to say, because I didn't really talk too much about it, but we've done more with the mayor's office ever. So, like, I'm tied in with Michael Outlaw, Nika Nastari, Renee Lammas, Mayor Joe Schember. I mean, he stands in front of people and says, one of my main things is to eliminate racism in the city of Erie. And that makes you proud. I mean, mm-hmm. as any citizen, not necessarily mm-hmm. if you're black, white, whatever, it just makes you proud to hear a mayor that's going to take that bold and courageous statement in front of anybody. So we've done a lot. We've done mayor for the days where we've had some of our students, middle school students,
right.
follow the mayor for the day. We've now structured that to support the Stair Climber Award. With the Stair Climbers, where we recognize one student from each of our buildings every month at the board meeting for improvements in attendance behavior and classroom performance. So that plus we've tied up the tied in with the SPCP, which is Strengthening Police Community Partnerships. We've had the mayor's office, assistant deputy, and the chief of police present, other people that are tied in with the mayor's office. When we've been in almost every one of our middle school and high schools. We have two left. We have East and Collegiate that we meet on a Wednesday morning. We have breakfast with the kids, and then we just get into a real conversation about like what's going on in your community, what can we do better as a police force, what can I do better as a mayor, you know, like with the youth. We're talking 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th through 12th.
I'd be interested to hear what some of the things you hear from them.
It's great because kids are real.
Yeah.
Kids are honest. And very real, and I know people that listen to this are going to say, oh, well, if you got a chief of police in there, you know, the kids are going to be real reluctant, but not after food breaks down a lot of trust barriers, right? So once you get that food in, and then people start to see that you're just being real, you know, and I think it helps, especially because even though I mentioned that we're culturally and diversely rich, we are still very black and white in terms of race in this city, and it's a shame. Because that's an issue, and it's an issue within, you know, the black community has its own issues, the white community has their own issues, and then separately we have an issue with content. But I feel strongly that a lot of the work, like you're saying, how's the community responding? I think a lot of the work that the mayor's doing, you know, with everything, with their Better Together Council that they're doing, we did the people suppers, we're bringing people together. So I think the community knows and sees that this is real, and this isn't just like a quick wave and a quick go, and it's going to just go back out. Like, this is the way that the community needs to be, and it's going to be a constant change. So I think the community response, from what I hear and people that I've met with, are people that probably would not have been at the table maybe 2-3 years ago, and I feel like that's going to make a very positive impact. And I think the word's getting out. I think the word's getting out with the district is really what they're doing. I think that, you know, people hearing about us working with the mayor's office, just real quick, I was at an equity summit down in Hershey, PA. I was invited to be there to speak as one of the panelists, and I shared out, and I talked about the fact that our school district is working with the mayor's office. And, I mean, as I was speaking, I looked around, and you should have seen people's face.
Yeah.
Because these were districts from across the state of Pennsylvania, and people were just like, that's unheard of. Like,
right.
Think of the political side of that, you know, thing, all those pieces that come in where people mix in, you know, the mayor, you know, political mayor's office with education. And so, but when I explained the things that we're doing, I mean, they were just like, wow. And so I really feel strongly that a lot of the tie-in of the mayor's office, them having a true heart, his whole team having a true heart to restore Erie, to bring it back, to care about every individual person, every individual race, ethnicity, and then the school district, you know, partnering up and moving in that same direction and working together, I think is really where, you know, it's going to make a major impact in the community. One thing that I do know that's coming up, we're having a Young People's Luncheon or a Better Together Youth event on March 25th at Barron. That came out of one of the Better Together big, large meetings that the mayor had, which is exciting. But right there, you're bringing students from our school district teaming up, going to Barron, and they're going to kind of go through this facilitation process, which is what the People Supper did to help build and repair and bring relationships together. So, I mean, there's a lot of little pieces going on.
And it's like, it's looking at, and you talked about the divide between the communities, and it's like, in Erie, it's almost like there's these well-worn grooves that people just keep moving on, and they view it as just natural. It's just how it is, and what you're talking about with the district and with the city is like, no, let's look at this, and let's fix it. Let's build these relationships, and let's not get in, you know, for years, these issues, like, it's on the radar, right? We've had tough conversations and meetings with lots of people getting upset, rightfully so, about conditions, but this is beyond sort of, okay, we'll do this and then come back and talk. This is like changing the relationships.
But I think it's important, like you said about the grooves, I still feel like that's where I think there's people, there's leaders and people that have been well known and are older, and they have followers. They have like a group of people, you know, that have always kind of stuck with them and they believe in them. And I feel like a lot of times those people don't even realize that the work that they're doing is fighting against like what we're trying to do currently, you know, with approaching it more from an all people's perspective as opposed to I got to take care of this particular group. And I think that, you know, and again, that goes on both sides of, you know, like I said, like the division of the black and the white. I think we have that still on both sides. I mean, I'm going to say this and be very transparent. I think on the white side, you have a lot of issues around classism.
Yep.
I learned a lot of this as I've been at many different buildings, and I've picked up a lot about the way that people are treated based on privilege, based on how much money they make or who they are or the influence or impact that they have or the nepotism. Like, all of those are key factors that play a role in both of those communities that I still feel that keep them very fractured,
mm-hmm.
and also are limits to keeping us from coming together. But again, I believe strongly that that's why the mayor's office and us as a school district, we know that the key is in the youth. We know that the key is in education. Because if your school district is performing well and doing well, then your city is going to be rolling and doing well.
It's all that potential of all those kids just maximizing
right.
it and not letting historic things hold people
Absolutely.
Back.
And we have so many great students within our school district, and it's a shame because we talk about that classes and we talk about that perspective or the bias that some people have. And a lot of people on the outside circle feel very strongly about inner city students and that they're not going to be able to come, that they can't achieve, that they're not going to make it to, you know, great schools or great scholarships, or, you know, that they're going to just be, you know, doing something wrong in their life. That's still a very strong, when you talk to people that live in the city that are in the school district, they're still very uncomfortable about putting their kids in the school district. I think we're doing tremendous work. I think we're bringing a lot of people back that may have left before. I mean, it's clear because we did a whole welcome home initiative last summer, right? We know we brought people back. But it's still some of those fractured, separated groups that I talk about that still, it would be great if we start to win some of them, some of the naysayers or some of the people that are kind of have that stuck mentality. It would be great when we start making an impact and on them, and they see the way that the district's going and the way that the mayor's office is going in terms of the community and really trying to build up, you know, a oneness.
What's your best idea for doing that?
Again, I think that I believe strongly that we are taking one of the great approaches. I think there's a couple different approaches, but I think one, again, I mentioned about the youth. I think the things that we're doing tied in with the mayor's office, really celebrating our youth. A lot of the pieces that the district's doing with the new pathways, we have five specific pathways that we're doing to help students be career focused, to help lead them into that next step. I just feel like that's one key piece, is really supporting and thrusting and bolstering our youth. Then the next part is that we have got to do a better job in the community, specifically with our parents. And when I say that is, there's a group of parents that are younger in age that are lost. Lost in terms of maybe religious side of things, lost in terms of like just fighting to keep ends met and working 2-3 jobs and, you know, bringing your kids to your mom's and dropping your kids off of here and all those different, I just feel like there's a major group of in our community that need more. So I'm not going to, I hope nobody gets offended by me saying they're lost, but that we need to support more. And I feel like we can do a much better job as a community to go and embrace those people. And I think as a district, we know that we have got to go to where our parents are at. So I think the mayor's office, I know the mayor's office has that same approach with some of the programs and issues, and they know they got to get into where the communities are. They got to have conversations with people. We got to start doing more like celebrations within those communities that a lot of people don't even want to walk by or wouldn't even want to drive through. You know what I mean? So that's, mm-hmm. that's what I mean. Like, if you really want to make change, how real do you really want to make change?
And I think you're touching on it, but I was going to ask you what you were learning when you're drilling down on these things, like in a granular level in the schools with what's going on with these kids and what's fueling, you know, any issues or problems or struggles, that's invariably going to take you into their lives, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I think what you're talking about mm-hmm. there. So it's fascinating that you're already thinking about that, like how to support those families. And are you getting, what kind of responses do you get from families?
So that's hit and miss. I mean, I'll be very honest with you, again, being very transparent. We have some schools that all of our schools are doing a great job, especially we have the community schools model, and I believe 8 of our schools now. And that has taken us to a whole other level.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that.
In terms of the game, like, you know, they're doing a lot with tie-in with just more events or outreach or, you know, having access to certain resources in the community, if it be via mental health or via like food support. Those have really made a major impact within those communities where those schools are at. So I feel strongly that's definitely a major key. That's an integral part in terms of how we build and restore a relationship within our community, in terms of like education and school, and the school being part of your
right.
actual neighborhood. You know what I mean? Because I think it's still looked at, you know, a lot of people have had bad experiences in school themselves, and so school is still looked at like,
it's freighted, it's just loaded.
I don't want to go in there, or those people aren't going to understand me. But I feel strongly that our district, we have done a lot of work to shift that thought process, because a lot of it is an adult mindset shift at all levels, from a superintendent, district leadership, building administrators, teachers, custodians. I mean, it's a mindset shift where we have to know that our job is to embrace all people. Our job is to go out of our way to help parents. You know, our job is to go out of our way to help our students. You know, we can't get into stinking thinking where, well, they got it, they're gonna be fine on their own, or that's the way they've lived like that, they'll make it through. We have to make sure that we're listening to people, we're getting more voice from students, from parents, from our community to make effective change. I feel very strong about that.
Besides the mayor's office, are there any other partners that you have or that you'd like to have? I mean, are churches kind of stepping up at all, or are you in conversation? I don't know.
I mean,
that's even appropriate, but
oh yeah, no, absolutely.
You know.
Oh, it is. I know people get caught up on church and state.
Yeah.
But we have to look past that again. Are we going to get caught up on church and state and looking at things from a regulation political standpoint?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we going to look at it like this is about people, and we're going to take any steps we need necessary
right.
to help people? So I am a people over process. I learned that from one of our youth. I'm involved in church, and I learned that one of our youth pastors said that. He's like, people over process. So ever since that, I've always thought about that way. It's funny you mention that, because that is one of the, when I first came in this position, Johnny Johnson, you know, well-known person in the community, he was talking about, like, you need to get the churches back involved. And it took some extent, he's so right, because there's a lot of, if you look at a lot of, kind of like the community school model, there's a lot of communities that are just like us, where we have some poverty areas, we have definitely diverse, you know, diverse areas, we have high fluency areas, excuse me, but that those communities are utilizing the churches to help support the work. So there's no issue with church and state to partner up with a church. I know that there's been a few churches that have reached out and said, hey, we'd like to be involved more with this, or we have a certain program that we feel can support this. But the one thing that, when I mentioned about those fractured communities and that, there's still a separation that we make as people of that church and state. So you have people that are willing to get involved and do some of the work, and it's just a matter of making those connections and taking it to that next step.
Mm-hmm.
So I do, me personally, I mean, that's why I was like smiling when you said that, because I feel strongly that there are phenomenal mentorship potentials of mentorships
mm-hmm.
from our churches that are, like, a lot of them are literally, I mean, like St. James's, you could, like,
right.
throw a pencil on the
right.
sidewalk across from Piper Burley. I mean, it's Second Baptist that's right next to Wilson,
right.
Reverend Higginbotham. I know I've actually had conversations with Reverend Higginbotham. I know, for example, our ECTIC, which is our Erie Coalition Trauma-Informed Care, I help support the diversity subcommittee. We actually held a meeting at Shiloh Baptist. So, I mean, it's just about that willingness of people putting yourself to the back seat and putting others or people around you in the front seat. And I think, again, I do feel like the churches definitely have a role to play to support the district, to come together as like a team, from a together perspective. You pose that question about churches again, you just got my mind kind of running, because I do know, like, there's churches out here that are doing phenomenal work too, like
yeah.
that open the doors to homeless people in a week. I mean, there's just there's so much potential, but it's that partnership and that together, like somebody that sit down and say, oh, you know, just to have a conversation with the pastor or an organizational leader there to build that bridge. I think that's all that's missing, and maybe we'll get there with the mayor's office and some of the work there, but I do think there's definite partnerships there.
We've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah.
What things are there areas we haven't touched on that you think are important for?
I do think that we talked a little bit of like walking in about PBIS, which I think that that's something to acknowledge. It's positive behavior intervention and supports. You can go to PBIS.org. It's powerhouse supported by University of Oregon. It's all regarding behavior management, you know, focusing on positive behavior. But it's just so much more to that. It's a framework. But I would just say that's kind of one thing I did wanted to share with you is that, you know, there were 5 schools that were PBIS schools 2 years ago. Last year we trained 5. So we made a major shift where the IU5, which is housed out in Edinburgh, Intermediate Unit 5, they have 2 facilitators that have supported us. But when they knew that we were going to expand out to looking at going district-wide, which that in itself was a lot of, there was a lot of conversation just in that, because a lot of people have different perspectives of what a behavior program, what a behavior framework or what should be used. There's a lot of different really good programs out there, but one thing about PBS is it's a framework that can be applied and layered in with trauma-informed practices, restorative practices, responsive classroom practices. So we've made strides as a district, and really until like last year, we trained 5 schools. And so we're at implementing, so we have 10 schools that are implementing PBIS. We have 3 right now training, and we have our last 3 next year, which is Lincoln Edison and Collegiate Academy. So that's really something to talk about, because not many districts have the capacity the ability to make that type of a shift. So with us having 16 buildings, there's 4 facilitators. I'm one of them. I'm kind of the district coordinator. So I kind of help with folks throwing surveys out and kind of making sure that we're all kind of sticking together and we're staying on the same page. But then we have a couple of our administrators in our buildings. Joe Crable, who's the principal of DePaulo Student Success Center, Jackie Bull, who's the assistant at McKinley, and Tim Sable, who's the principal at Deal. They're our facilitators. So they each have about 2 or 3 buildings apiece. And then they help continue to meet with them, go to meetings, check in with them, make sure that the school is moving to a level of fidelity. So it's a really important piece, because of the fact that it's all about supporting the adult to shift that mindset from when it comes to behavior to teach, reteach, and model the expectation that you want. Because when we talk about academics, if a kid is not doing well with multiplication facts or struggling with a certain skill deficit in language arts, what do you think a teacher would do if there was an academic concept that needed to be?
Explain it over and over again.
Explain it over and over, reteach it, take mm-hmm. it through it. But when a kid has a behavior issue in the classroom,
Stick them in the corner,
take them to the principal's office, mm-hmm. Take something away from them, punish mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. So that's the concept, that's the mindset that we're shifting, is instead of focusing on that consequence-driven punishment, punitive, it's more about focusing on the positive. So you have these expectations, here's what you expect from the student. If the student doesn't give you what you expect, don't go to the punishment standpoint. Go to the reteach, teach, and model standpoint. And sometimes it might have to be done with an individual student, a couple, a class. It just depends on how the situation goes. But that's a tough concept because, again, when you talk about academics, people don't get personally tied in too much. I mean, some teachers that are really passionate and maybe they have a difficulty, you know, and then it can get them a little bit riled, but behavior is just different. When you have somebody that's being defiant, somebody that could be disrupting, somebody that's just being insubordinate, or that could make it more personal and get you a little bit fit to be tied. So that's why I feel strongly that's one of the big pieces behind that disproportionality conversation and us reducing our behavior events. That's one of a big component behind that. And as a school district, you know, saying publicly, which I think a lot of people do know, but like when we talk about behavior in our schools, we've brought our behavior events way down. And we have buildings that had like 700 events that now a year later are down to like 200.
That's extraordinary.
We have schools that may have had mm-hmm. like 40 referrals in a quarter are down to like 1 to 2 referrals in a quarter. So, I mean, those things are very exciting to see being moved, are moving forward. But I think has everything to do with just that community, that approach, shifting, focusing more on positive behavior, which will make an impact directly on the students, but even more so the staff, because we want to improve staff morale. Mm-hmm. Morale is everything when it comes mm-hmm. to adults, right? Mm-hmm. Any organization, mm-hmm. if your morale's funky or if your morale's off, I mean, people, mm-hmm. it can make it very stressful. It can make it very difficult. So I've been very fortunate. When I was at my years at Central Tech, we had, like, Matt Punt, Jerry Misfit, Dave Cranking. We had a very positive morale. I mean, like, there was a union. We have union. You know, we have a teacher union. But, I mean, we could literally go into a meeting with our union reps. And we'd talk about the business, and everybody would walk out laughing.
Right.
Because there was a morale that was set in place, and it trickled out throughout the whole building. So, I mean, I've had experiences, and I've been in buildings such, and I've been in relationships such as that. So I know how important it is to continue to really focus on improving morale for our adults as well.
Mm-hmm. And we've covered it a fair amount, and we didn't talk about it here, just the effort to diversify the staff. It strikes me, that's, you're going to tell me, and I'm going to ask you, like, why that's important and mm-hmm. how you go about doing that. But listening to you, there's just so many other dimensions of the work you're doing. It's, you know, it kind of puts all of that in perspective, too, instead of just a straight-up numbers count, right?
It's about people.
Yeah, but just, you know, talk to me about why that's important. I mean, there's data that shows that it's important, right,
absolutely.
To have...
Yeah, I mean, for sure. So, so in terms of, you know, in our district, in terms of data, you know, we have about 840 teachers. I would say 30 or less are of color. So if you really look at the numbers, we're talking about, like, black teachers, you know, teachers, because we have to be real that the majority of our students are African American, and then we have the other ethnicities that are coming right up, you know, like mm-hmm. I said, with the refugee families and that coming in on a steady influx. But you're talking, like, less than 3% of our teachers are African American or black. So just when you hear that number, I mean, 30 compared to 840, mm-hmm. so that means 810 teachers are white out of the 840. So just knowing that kind of sets the stage of, like, why is it important to help with this diversity work? So in the past, just numbers and sheer numbers, and knowing that we need to help increase that, you know, there's the impact that it makes. I mean, there's research. I mean, you could Google about research. There's that students that have had, like, especially a black male teacher in elementary, have far more success when it comes to, like, finishing school and going on to college, mm-hmm. getting to the workforce. So again, I know that the black male in the elementary level is one. Then just having a black teacher as a whole, it's. You know, past getting caught up on the race thing, people have to take in consideration about the people and the relationship. So again, we talk about favor, right, with bias mm-hmm. and favor. So if you're, you know, if you're predominantly coming up in a black family, black environment, black church, all that, you know, and then you go into school and you're mostly of color, and then you have a white, in most public school settings, inner city, 80% of the teachers that are in most of those, that's like an average. And again, this mm-hmm. is all research. This is not me saying it.
This is all right.
On the internet. You could Google it. But 80% of the teachers are white, female, and they come from rural or suburban environments. Mm-hmm. So the relating to, relevancy, all that plays a role. So past, like, there being evidence-based data showing that kids succeed with another teacher of color in front of them, if you ask me why, one, they identify. Right? They can identify directly with that person because that's who they see at home. That's who they see in their community. The second part of that is the trust wall. I think that people have to realize trust is huge for any individual, right? A human being, trust is huge. But even more so, if you come from an environment where trust is an issue, mm-hmm. where maybe you have plagued with some trauma, or you come from, you know, just trust as a whole, being honest and all. When you get in and you have a person of color in front of you as your teacher, your trust wall is going to be a lot lower. If you are white and you're a female, or you're white and you're a male, because of that, the trust wall is going to be higher. And I would get in any conversation with anybody about this.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that I'm saying that trust wall cannot come down. But what I'm saying is, based on your color,
mm-hmm.
the trust wall is going to be lowered or heightened.
Mm-hmm.
So what it means is that person, that white person, even though most of our schools do have a white teacher in front of them, they absolutely can get the same results that somebody of color can get if they choose to have high expectations and they choose to build relationships with their students and their families. I mean, but it's really two things that are key. And we see that time and time again. You see white males and white teachers that have tons of success with students of color, but it's because they have made the choice to take those steps, to set the bar high. And setting the bar high doesn't mean just academically, but it means behaviorally as well. You hold them to a certain level. That doesn't mean screaming at them or slamming them with punishments, but that means that you're reteaching, you're teaching, you're building. When you show up at football games, or, you know, I know for a while online it was like the handshake, right? Like, I don't know if you ever saw that, where like teachers made up handshakes with kids. But that's a piece that connects them. It's about connection. It's about relationship. So just to go by my point, the person, the teacher of color, the trust wall is going to be higher. It's just going to take a little bit longer for that wall, for that relationship to develop. And they're going to be gauging you. They're going to be watching where you're at. So if you come in there and you're definitely like overwhelmed and you're not making connections and you're just going to punitive standpoint and you don't have belief in the students in front of you, you're going to have a major issue. And that can be a black, Hispanic, Asian teacher just as much as it can be a white teacher. So when I get in these conversations about diversity recruitment, I'm always cautious to make sure we talk about everybody. But it is critical, and it is very important to get people of color, high qualified, you know, people that have no problems with high expectations and building relationships in front of our students of color. It would make a drastic impact on them educationally and behaviorally. So with that being said, some of the things that we've done for the last 2 years, we utilize what's called Diversity in Ed. I mean, you could Google it. It's lost words based out of Alabama or something. I'm sorry, but they specifically work with like local universities, other agencies to help with recruitment of diverse candidates, teacher candidates. So they do a lot of work on their own, going to NHBCUs, which are National Historical Black Colleges, campuses and universities. They do a lot of the legwork for you, which is nice. So we utilized them for the first 2 years. This year we pulled back. We haven't used them yet. But they even had, it was really cool last year, we did a virtual reality job fair. So we're literally like, I interviewed somebody that was like in Brazil. I interviewed somebody that was in Jamaica.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right here in this office, on the TV, over the laptop. So just things like that. And actually the lady from Jamaica was like the best candidate out of all of them. And actually we started having a little bit of a conversation about, you know, is there a possibility of her being able to come over here and look to take an open teaching position? So like those things wouldn't happen without that connection, right? So I think the my first year in terms of diverse recruitment was really just the community hearing that someone like me, a person of color, got a position as a district leader, especially in this type of work. I think that made a lot of impact to the people in the community. Started to feel, okay, the district's starting to look to change a little bit. And I noticed it started to make an impact because within about a year, I started seeing people of color like coming in, because we have and human resources is right down the corner, down the hall here. And we have the boards up with all the positions. But it's not, my first year, I didn't see a lot of people of color. And then after about a year, I started seeing a lot of people of color coming in here looking at the board to see
what
jobs are.
That's interesting. Yeah.
That tells you, right? Do you talk about how do you gauge?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So not only that, I was still like people such as like Angela McNair is one of our school board members. I mean, she has done intentionally like talk to young people, talk to people that may have had degrees and are open to alternative certification. And she's had groups of people come here and talk directly to myself and our assistant superintendent, Bea Bursky, or director of human resources, Teresa Zimagala, and make some connections within that. So past just like people knowing that the district is changing based on who's hiring, who's being put in these positions, the Go For Diversity team put together a teacher diversity action plan called TDAP. So there's four steps, and the first step is to focus on our homegrown. So we've done a lot of work, kind of like mentioned the five pathways. One of the five pathways is human services, and there's an education focus in there. So literally at collegiate or at Erie High, there's courses that are being created that are specific to, would lead you up to becoming a classroom teacher. Not only that, but since Erie, since the inception, well, East High School actually did some work called early childhood development. So they actually created a lab, an early childhood development lab, would train students so that they could move right into like a daycare facility or like a pre-K program. So that was already kind of going.
Yeah,
they took that and just kind of blew that up a little bit more at Erie High, where it's really productive. And making major strides for those kids. So that with that CDA, though, you can come out, you complete that program, you could actually come out with nine college level credits. So not only do you have that, but in the past 3 years, they've actually had a professor from Edinburgh coming in and teaching intro level education courses, so like intro to multiculturalism, intro to disabilities. So they're right now in their, this will be the third year, sixth semester, there's another course taking place right now. So that was the step one, was the homegrown approach and really making connections with the local universities, our student teaching placements, our school, our own schools, to really build a specific, almost like a track for kids that want to pursue teaching. The second one was alternative certifications. And so it honestly, like in my first year, I had numerous people that had come to me, either parents or people from the community, that may have had a criminal justice background or a marketing background or a degree. And they're like, I want to be a teacher, you know? Mm-hmm. Or you see people and they're coaches, or they're, you know, you just see somebody like playing pickup basketball. You're like, man, you make a great teacher.
Yeah.
You start talking about them. Here they got a degree and blah, blah, blah. Next thing, so that was the second step. And the third step was really doing a better job with recruiting and job search for candidates in places like Farrell and Meadville.
Right.
You know, places that aren't too far away from us that do have some diversity. Of course, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, and Cleveland, with running ads in the paper. So maybe if there's some substitute teachers that are looking for a permanent spot, well, hey, 2 hours down the road,
right,
we can take care of you. So that was step three. And then step four was really put an emphasis on the community, that education is number one. So we did that we did four forums in the first 2 years. Now we do two. We held one in November at the Booker T, which was focused on educators. We had a whole panel of about 12 different educators that were homegrown, that were all of color, and they got to speak. I got to do a better job. We called it breaking barriers. So if you ever heard about breaking barriers, that was it. We advertised for about 2 weeks. Eric Irwin did a great job popping on Facebook. But then this other forum we're going to do is the student voices. So like what we saw today, Mr. Polito's in there, our superintendent's talking with students kind of at every, so you had elementary, middle, and high school students that are going to rotate and talk to him for about an hour apiece, just about the school and what's taking place. But I'll do a student voices forum where I have two graduates come in and they moderate. There'll be moderators and they'll lead students through a group of questions, and it'll just be a true, real student, all student-led conversation. Mm-hmm. So those are the four steps, but that's the Teacher Diversity Action Plan. So that is in place. It's been in place since, I think, December of 2018, and it's been moving. And there's a lot of different pieces there, but I don't want to take you through too much.
That's all right.
But so that, when you ask about that, that's one. The other two newer pieces that are going on is we've been working with Gannon University. They secured a planning grant for what's called a teacher residency program. So what that is where you focus on class experience in complement of coursework. So you get students, and it doesn't have to be students of color, but of course we're looking to help support the diversity work. So we really are looking at students of color that are either currently at Gannon or will be going into Gannon that can fall into this grant. And so some of the first year is a planning grant, the second year would actually be funding that we could support the individual student with funding for school. So that's one of the other big pieces, and that's just started this year.
And your rate of hiring did pick up, right? I think Ed last reported eight new teachers of color.
Yeah, well, I think our goal was to do 10.
Yeah.
10 to do, excuse me. Our goal was to try to achieve 10 hires of color with the people that are diverse, one every year for the next, 10 years.
Right.
But it's something that's ongoing. It's kind of like what we've set in place, without changing any language or like that. Just something that we know that the work has to be done. And, I believe we average about 30 open positions a year. So as we're working those diversity initiatives, that's just an average based on retirement or, all those different maternity leave. So the one part of the diversity recruitment has been helping is now we have a pool. It was all about getting at least getting a pool of candidates.
Right.
So now we have a pool of candidates to go to select from. So it makes it a little easier on Patty Cirelli of our human resources. She's our human resources recruiter. She's got a pool to go to. So now we got a position that open, maternity leave's coming up. We can make a phone call quickly and have somebody to look to take that position.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the steps that we've been taking. But I think just being more intentional with the recruitment, having a pool, and then when positions are open, then we know that there's people that we can pull up and go to.
And I know if I've had you talking till you're almost like losing your voice, but
sorry.
No, it's good. I do want to ask, you know, sophomore Ken Nixon had the experience he did. Could he have pictured a grown-up Ken Nixon here in this office doing this work?
No, I would have, no.
Is it?
No, that sophomore Ken Nixon, the 10th grader there, was, no, it was a little more hard-headed. A little bit of a troublemaker. Yeah, I mean, a little bit of a troublemaker in terms of outside. Oh, it was never in school, you know what I mean? But outside, just like running, having fun. I was big into sports, but I never really kind of always thought about being a teacher here and there, but never really until like that situation I mentioned at the beginning. But I never saw myself, you know, sitting in an office like this, having a conversation with you.
Yeah,
I'm getting in front of teachers and superintendents at an equity summit. You know, none of that I would ever have thought I'd be doing.
Would you have thought your city would be in this spot? Like,
no. So I would say, you know, because we have a lot of people that finish high school and they leave. They're out of here.
Yeah.
They don't want to go to North Carolina. You know, Charlotte's right. Like, Charlotte, they call Charlotte Mini Erie or something like that.
Yeah.
Because everybody goes to Charlotte. Now it's Atlanta.
That story.
So yeah, Atlanta's like the next. It's like you're either going to Charlotte or Atlanta. You know what I mean? That's where a lot of people from Erie go. But I would say, you know, I think because of my family here, because of some of the relationships I've had with coaches or whatever, I it wasn't like I wasn't looking to leave. You know, my wife, her family's huge. You know, she's got a large family here. So, you know, just having those connections to come back. So I myself wasn't looking to leave Erie, but I do think that a lot of people do think like the grass is greener. I know like a lot of people have that grass greener mentality. And when they go and then like 2-3 years later, they usually are back in Erie. Because one thing about Erie, I mean, honestly, besides the four seasons, I mean, which is nice to have a mix. Some people don't like that.
Right.
But it's the proximity. I mean, you can get anywhere in 10 to 15 minutes. You know what I mean? Sometimes Peachtree traffic gets a little heavy or 90 gets a little backed up. But it's nothing like sitting on sitting on 376 in Pittsburgh for 30 minutes. Going less than five miles an hour to get to where you live. So, I mean, some of those pieces are just great. And then the connections and knowing people, you know, and then all that we have in terms of sports, you know, I just think that, you know, we have a great, I mean, I didn't even mention Presque Isle. This is kind of sounds like some of the stuff I say to the teacher candidates when we're talking.
Oh, no, that's good.
And we always
that's
talk about Presque Isle. We talk about I always say, you know, that this is there's a church. We start with the church first. There's a church from like in every square mile. There's also a bar in every square mile, I think, something like that. So,
at least
whatever way you want to go, so you can get sanctified and raised up, or you can get down to the bottom of the bottle there. No, so, but no, I think those are key pieces. But I think that's a lot of that's a draw that we have to recruit and bring people to Erie. And I do think that a lot of people just they've been here and they've experienced, you know, from the one thing that my main. If you ask me, like, what is my quick elevator line or what have you, would be to transform systemic change to impact students and families, because I know that that's why people want to leave, because there are a lot of systems and policies that are not in favor of young people or not in favor of people of color. I mean, there are. And so I think the mayor's office is doing a lot with some of our local, our businesses and industrial organizations and that to really help fix some of that, to get people to step outside of the hiring the same people, the same families that look like the same, you know what I mean? So I think that's where, and so I mean, you know, when they talk, and I didn't know if this was going to come up, but when they said about Erie being the worst city in America, city for blacks, I mean, there's a lot of those systemic pieces that are playing a role, but there's a lot that we can do too as a black,
right.
as a community,
right.
as a black community, to uplift each other and to be more open to taking on
right.
new work and building new relationships with people, so we don't have to be in those same grooves. You know, you mentioned those same grooves. We don't have to walk the same path. We can venture into new paths. So and I do feel like that's kind of what will help us. I do feel like the mayor's office is making strides, us as a district, with changing the way we just work with students, families, the way we're doing education, academically, behaviorally. It's exciting to be in the district. It's exciting to be in the district to know where we're going. You know, because I know that's going to be it's going to be tremendous. I think it's going to total 180 from what we see now and what people talk about now.
And as we said before, it has the potential to change a lot of things outside the district. So.
Absolutely. So I think I've covered it. There's one thing about the diversity recruiting that I feel like I'm missing, but I know the teacher residency.
Well, the competition, I think you've talked about too, like just the difficulty. Like there's a lot of people that are trying to, you know, recruit teachers, and that would pose a challenge too.
But. Yeah, I mean, we go to what's called, just real quick, we go to the Pittsburgh Educational Recruitment Consortium, I think it's called. It's called PERC. But we go down every year, I think it's in April. And I mean, you're down there with school districts from China, from Ireland, you know, Pittsburgh, Maryland, Philly. And then the one thing that was crazy, so like 5 minutes into it, no lie, because the candidates are all like in just waiting in line, right? 5 minutes into it, I can't remember what school district, and if I knew it, I wouldn't say it, but it was outside Pittsburgh, very popular. I guess the teachers started like, well, I'm not going to say that. They started a good salary, but we do good too. But they had a line within 5 minutes. They had like 100-some people. I was like, oh. And we were like two booths from them.
Yeah.
So we just kind of like worked our way over. And I snagged, hey, you're tired of waiting. Don't you want to go?
Yeah.
But the recruitment work is definitely real. But it's all about connections. And so, and I do feel like that's going to make a major impact.
Yeah. So. And it's rough, too, with the people outside just know of Erie. They think snow or, all the stupid Rust Belt national coverage and stuff.
That's another selling point, too. We don't have the snakes or the bugs that other people do.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's nice. So, yeah. But I really appreciate you giving me time. I guess the one thing that I do want to, I don't know where you can put this at, but I did want to share, like, you asked about inspiration.
Yeah.
And so we didn't talk too much, but I get my inspiration from God, from the Bible, and definitely from my family, and from my wife and my kids. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
You know, and that's helped me in terms of, in this job, dealing with different people that might have been friends or family members that I grew up with that now look at me differently, or because I'm doing this work. People still have wrong thinking, I think, because if you're black and you're talking with somebody that's white, that you're an Uncle Tom or you're selling out. It's just like, man, you got to get over yourself. Because if we don't have communication or build relationships with people, you're just going to be sitting on the same street doing the same stuff, but blaming everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So grow up a little bit. But with that being said, I do get my inspiration, though. It's all about my wife, supportive, has my back, my kids, they're everything. And that's, honestly, that's why I do what I'm doing, because my kids are all in the school district. So I'm a senior, collegiate, sophomore, eighth grader at Wilson, and fifth grader at Connell. So they all play for Erie High. So I'm firmly invested. My wife works in a district. She's a parenting caseworker. She actually is a doula. She actually doulas.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's a doula, and she actually, I believe she's on like 20. She doulas the teenage pregnancies. So nothing better than, you know, some of our students that might not have a strong family structure, for her to be able to be there to help them process and get through that delivery. And to be 15, 16, 17, 18, too, at that. So, but that's real work. So you talk about
support at that point can make all the difference
her
and that child's
life. Absolutely. So that's where we're at. I mean, so you got a little, I just wanted to leave that because I feel like that's very important to have a faith. And it's not about being a Christian, but it's about having a faith, having a belief system, and then having family and key people that, you know, that you go all in for on a daily basis. Mm-hmm.
I thank you very, very much.
I thank you.
Fascinating.
I really appreciate this opportunity. It's been a great conversation.
I agree. Thanks.
Thank you.